Good morning, Mrs. Carroll. This is the August 13th, 2025 meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners Credit Committee. This meeting is also being made available via live teleconference for public access. Val Lingasamy, the Assistant Director of Information Technology, will provide information on this in-person and telephonic meeting.
Thank you, Carol. Good morning. This is Val Lingasamy, Assistant Director of IT at Rhode Island Housing. This meeting will be recorded and available for review on the Rhode Island Housing website within 3 to 5 business days after the meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, your telephones will be muted. To unmute, press *6. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-429-1427. Thank you.
Thank you, Val. Good morning. This is Corinne Myers, General Counsel. Members of the public can view the RI Housing website to see today's agenda and information and documents for each of the actions being taken. If the teleconference portion of the meeting is interrupted, we will stop the meeting and attempt to restore the audio. Committee Chair Kevin Orth will preside at this morning's meeting. Commissioners, staff, and guests, please do state your name prior to speaking for the benefit of those joining us by teleconference and also for our minute taker. Now I will turn it over to the committee chair to call the meeting to order. Thank you.
Thanks, Corinne. It's now 9:33. This is Kevin Orton. I call a credit committee meeting to order. Carol, you want to take attendance, please?
Commissioner Designee Weber.
Here.
Commissioner Orr.
Here.
Commissioner Goddard.
Here.
Great. Thank you. Okay. First agenda item is approval of minutes of the credit committee meeting held on June 11, 2025. For this one? Thank you, Deborah. Any comments or suggested changes or anything? Nope. Okay. Corinne, take a vote on this one.
Of course, all those in favor of approving the minutes of the credit committee meeting held on June 11th, 2025, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Looks like a unanimous vote to me. Thank you.
Number two is recommendation for firm approval of financing for Hillcrest Village Apartments located in Providence and Seth? No.
Penny.
Yeah. Please present. Thank you.
Daniel Pollard here. Preservation of affordable housing is requesting tax-exempt bonds up to $35 million, of which $15 million will remain as a Rhode Island Housing first mortgage. This development received preliminary approval in October 2023. Hillcrest Village Apartments is a 130-unit, six-story development built in 1979 and extensively renovated in 2005. The improvements comprise 112 one-bedroom and 18 two-bedroom units serving residents who earn up to 60% AMI. The developer is in the process of renewing the HAP contract for an additional 20 years with rents marked up to market and extended through 2045. Since preliminary approval, the development has received Grant Resilient Retrofit Program Award from HUD in the amount of $7.8 million or $60,000 a unit. As a result, changes to the initial scope of work will include a new high-efficiency HVAC system, rooftop and parking lot solar arrays, strengthened roof, new windows, and replacement of exterior brick, new energy-efficient siding, and additional insulation throughout. Further upgrades will include upgrades to kitchens, baths, and finishes, a new roof, full building Wi-Fi, washers and dryers, and elevator modernization. 3 ADA accessible units will be upgraded, and 3 additional units will be upgraded to conform to the 2% individual impairment guidelines. The total development cost has increased since preliminary approval. The increase can be attributed to the GRIP award, which added an additional $60,000 per unit in construction costs and triggered Davis-Bacon wages, along with additional architectural and engineering costs. The high acquisition cost, supported by a Rhode Island Housing Commission appraisal, is also a key driver at $184,000 per unit. Boston Financial is the syndicator, paying 87.5 cents per credit, generating approximately $27,850,000 in total equity over 10 years. The annual tax credit amount is $3,180,934. The investor is Citizens Bank. The Rhode Island Housing bonds will come in at approximately 50% completion. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Sam. Motion for this one.
So,
So moved.
All right. I'll second it. Me.
Yes, this is
yes, Deborah.
Commissioner Goddard, operating expenses. Improvements to be fully electrified to meet the Enterprise Green Communication. And reading it. And operating costs are going up because of that, except for solar.
The solar is reducing the operating expenses. We did have a breakdown of that. I don't have it here in front of me.
$189,000 per year in reduction based on having the solar on site.
Mm-hmm. While the other stuff is $27,000. So I'm just confused. Just clarify me. I thought the GRRP funding would help reduce operating costs.
Yeah, so this is Seth St. Jean. We've talked extensively with our lease housing team. So right now, it doesn't appear like it's really moving much, but once we actually get new numbers, everything's more efficient and it starts really generating, we have, basically analysis from the green rater that, it's going to occur and there's going to be a pretty massive reduction in their energy costs.
Okay, that's what I was expecting to see.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that here.
Okay, so yeah, we could outline that and add it into the board right up.
Yeah, I think that's pretty valuable.
Yeah, okay.
Is gas one of the utilities currently property?
They have, yeah, boilers.
So that's also part of it, is it increased electrical cost is taking over from the gas.
Right.
So we need to have a more rich, I think, analysis to show that.
Yeah.
That'd be helpful. Who is the construction lender on this?
Citizens.
Citizens, that's yep. Okay.
And then we'll come in at
50%. So.
Yeah.
Okay. So how the, it's a $20 million equity bridge. How do you all feel about that risk?
Seth, I mean, we're coming in at 50%, so, a lot of the work will be done. It's a pretty similar structure we've done in other deals. We just did the Cassett Manor with POA, same kind of deal. Deal's moving along really well, so I think no issues from our side. Oscar has something else.
Yeah, this is Tara. I think this kind of model has worked very well for us, and being so familiar with the property and with the developer, we feel confident that it will be a successful transaction.
Okay, great.
It's a GC we have a lot of experience with as well as the architect, so.
Right.
All the players are well known to us.
And Citizens, I assume, is also an investor.
Yep.
And then the just might require a crystal ball. How solid is this GRRP funding?
So what we've heard is that if you are so far along in the process and have your commitments, it will be honored and it's going to move forward. So that's the last we've heard from POA, but, obviously with everything going on federally, there still is always a question.
Okay.
So, if it does, the rug comes out, I think POA would then have to reduce their scope and kind of rejigger a little bit. But, they've sent us emails and things in writing that, it's on them and they're going to take the risk. So if costs do arise because of it, they'll take it on.
Okay.
And just to say, the group... The stuff that we read that follows the grants is the same thing, that the existing grants are going to be honored just on this going forward.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Sure. Question is the price, the credit pricing. I know every deal is a little bit different, but we're going to talk about another POA deal that has very similar characteristics, albeit smaller. I would have thought that, again, not really diving into the details, but on its face, I would assume the smaller deal might get lower pricing, but this one has 87.5 cents versus I think it was 94 cents. Any reason for that you're aware of for the discrepancy?
So this is essentially the only issue I think that came up for Hillcrest was that they had the pricing of 94 cents because of the delays with GRRP, and this was a larger GRRP award. because of that, you know, the investor and syndicator decided to reduce the credit amount moving forward, because then they're not going to get, you know, placed in service until, you know, whatever, I don't know exactly when they'll place in service, but, you know, it's going to obviously delay it.
The credit delivery is more delayed on Hillcrest than it is on Hillside, significantly so.
Yeah.
7 cents. Oh, okay. Questions?
No.
Okay. Thank you. Take a vote.
Of course. All those in favor of recommending firm approval of financing for Hillcrest Village Apartments Province, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. We have another unanimous vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Item number three is recommendation for firm approval of financing for Hillside Village Apartments in Providence. And Daniel, you can take this one.
Yes. Yes. Daniel Pollard here. Preservation of Affordable Housing is requesting tax-exempt bonds up to $13.2 million, of which $5.3 million will remain a Rhode Island Housing First mortgage. The development received preliminary approval in October 2023 as part of a combined preservation deal with Pocasset Manor, another POA development. Hillside Village Apartments is a 42-unit family community built in 1991 in three-story buildings. The improvements comprise a mix of 24 two-bedroom and 18 three-bedroom units serving residents who earn up to 60% AMI. The developer is in the process of renewing the HAP contract for an additional 20 years with rent marked up to market and extended through 2045. After preliminary approval, Hillside Village Apartments was awarded $2,520,000 of Green Resilient Retrofit Program funds. Since the group funds triggered Davis Bacon wages, POA decided to separate the properties into two standalone developments. As a result of the GRRP award, the original scope of work changed. Energy improvements from the group funds include a new high-efficiency HVAC system, a strengthened roof to handle the weight of the new solar array, removal of the current facade and replacement with rigid foam sheathing, foundation rigid foam insulation, and rigid foam sheathing on the roof. The remainder of the construction scope includes new kitchen cabinets and countertops, updated lighting, interior doors, VCT flooring, and bathroom upgrades. Additional community-wide renovations and improvements will include new roofs, full building Wi-Fi, new washers and dryers, and clapboard siding. The TDC per unit does exceed the $450,000 per unit threshold as identified in the qualified allocation plan. High acquisition costs, supported by Rhode Island Housing Commission appraisal, are a key driver at $220,143 per unit, along with the $60,000 per unit in additional construction costs from the GRRP funding. Combined, this represents approximately 44% of the TDC per unit, inclusive of reserves. Boston Financial is a syndicator paying 94.5 cents per credit, generating approximately $11.1 million in total equity over 10 years. The annual tax credit amount is $1,174,730. The investor is Citizens Bank. Rhode Island Housing Bonds will come in at approximately 50% completion. Happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you very much, Dan.
So moved.
I assume this one's a... I'll jump in. I assume this is the same structure. Financially, Citizens is going to do the construction loan, and we're going to step in at 50%.
Oops.
And this one, 6,000 a unit, exceeds the, you know, cost of new construction. Clearly not a model for greening our portfolio, I don't think. We're not putting in any state funding into this. That's correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's, the acquisition is $223,000 per unit, so that skews the numbers significantly.
Right. No, I'm doing about $235 a unit in rehab. Okay.
Just again, I think that this is from that property, just a clear explanation. Mm-hmm. On these statements.
Yep.
Yep, you can have that.
I agree. I think that's critical to gain kind of support for putting money into the green project.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to show some kind of return in return. Yeah. Yeah. No other comments or questions? Okay. Corinne, Let's take a vote.
Very happy to. All those in favor of recommending firm approval of financing for Hillside Village Apartments in Providence as presented, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Please say nay. With three votes to recommend, the motion is approved. Thank you.
Thank you. Turn to item number four. Final 2020 qualified allocation. James, you got this one?
I do.
Thank you.
At the June meeting, the Rhode Island Housing Board approved a draft 2026 Qualified Allocation Plan, QAP, governing the allocation of low-income housing tax credits, and publicized notice advertising a public hearing, which was held on July 15th. About 18 attendees came to the hearing to share their thoughts, and public comment period ended on July 18th. As of that date, four parties submitted written comments, which are summarized below. And I will just discuss them now, and then we'll get into the very few changes that we made. The first commenter, the Rhode Island Public Expenditure Council, RIPEC, provided a number of comments. One was that while they were very happy to see that we put a total development cost cap in, they recommended that we reduce it. Rhode Island Housing is mindful of the need to contain costs, and we believe that TDC cap is the most effective manner to do that. We believe the $500,000 cap is consistent with current construction trends and fair relative to the market. Certainly, we acknowledge that there are conditions that exist outside of the developer's control or the market control, and we have made allowances for some exceptions to that total development cost based on evidence provided by developers. We don't anticipate any change to the recommended $500,000 cap or the extraordinary conditions as enumerated. Second comment from RIPEC was suggest that the 2026 QAP incentivize mixed-income housing by prioritizing developments that include middle-income and market-rate residential units. This is a repeat comment from RIPEC, and last year we did make an adjustment to our scoring based on their input, increasing the points from 3 to 5 for the incorporation of mixed market-rate housing. We do understand that there's a need for housing at all price points, and we support that. However, the low-income housing tax credit program is principally intended to produce units serving low-income populations, specifically those earning less than 60% of area median income, and most of the resources generated by that program we feel are best served for that purpose. We are contemplating no change. Third comment from RIPEC suggested that the QAP allow the allocation of tax credits for the development of single-room occupancy SRO units. While that is an allowable use under Section 42 of the Internal Revenue Code, we moved away from using tax credits to fund SRO units in 2023 after a long consultation with our partners who work directly with service provision and housing individuals experiencing homelessness and other at-risk populations. The providers indicated that they strongly believed that SRO housing was no longer a best practice in their field and didn't provide the at-risk households they serve with the best chance of success. Many providers have moved to convert existing SROs to efficiencies or one bedrooms to better serve at-risk populations. So while SROs may appear cost-effective, they do lack the dignity and permanence that should be inherent in housing solutions for our most vulnerable Rhode Islanders. We don't contemplate any change. Second commenter was One Neighborhood Builders. Their first comment was just a request for clarification as far as 10-year placed in service restriction. These exceptions that they are talking about are noted in Section 42 of the Internal Revenue Code, and we will make direct reference to them in the QAP for clarity. That will be the first change you see when we go through the changes. Second comment, in reference to our financing points, they basically appreciate that unsuitable soils were included, but asked that there are other things that be included in the exceptions to the TDC cap. Our response was that the proposed list that we put in there was not meant to be all-inclusive, and the application can address additional requests for a cost to be considered an extraordinary condition with evidence provided, so no change contemplated there. Third comment from ONB, they appreciate Rhode Island Housing's allocation of points for additional accessible units and request clarification whether they are Type A or Type B units. The current standard applied by Rhode Island Housing is that 5% of all dwelling units meet uniform federal accessibility standards. Accessibility criteria, bonus points are awarded for developments exceeding 10% of Type A UFAS compliant units. So we will note that in the QAP, but no change is recommended in scoring. A comment from ONB, the inclusion of mixed income developments is intriguing, and ONB looks forward to continuing to consider mixed income housing. It discusses that the way that we've allocated the points is unclear, so to provide greater clarity, we will adjust the language in the QAP to read units serving households above 80% AMI instead of market rate to allow for, make it clear that we're allowing for middle-income units, and change more than 30% to more than 20% due to a typographical error. So it was a good catch by OMB. We thank them. Their fifth comment indicates that while they appreciate that we encourage 30 years of affordability, recommend that we incentivize even longer affordability. Functionally here in Rhode Island, very few developments have ever gone to market. They refinance after the compliance period and extend affordability at that time. We're certainly open to looking into the impact of longer affordability covenants, but we don't anticipate any change in terms of incentivizing them right now. We will talk to our partners in the syndication investment world to assess what the potential impacts on credit pricing investment might be if we were to do so, but no changes recommended at this time. Third commenter, Preservation of Affordable Housing, POA, recommended changes to our clerk and project manager fee caps and payment schedule requirements. Those are not necessarily dealt with in the QAP particularly. It is a good note, and we certainly will look at that. We recognize that clerk OPM costs have risen, and we certainly will look into that and make any changes appropriately in other Rhode Island housing guidance documents, specifically developer handbook. No change to the QAP is recommended, but it's a good note and certainly something we'll take into account. POA also noted that our practice of reviewing plans at 50%, 90%, and 100% for 4% deals is time and consuming process. We are going to, in the coming year, take a larger look at the design and construction process to see how we can make it more effective and more efficient. And we do acknowledge that a change to the design review process will impact developments taking part in the tax credit program. We will make any changes in other guidance documents, again, the developer handbook principally. No change recommended to the QAP at this time, but certainly something we're taking into consideration and good feedback from POA. The fourth commenter was Penrose, and strongly encouraged that the 2026 QAP encourage and allow developers to generate additional tax credit equity through basis generated by acquisition value, which would be offset by a seller note, or additional deferred developer fee above the allowable paid fee, and that those costs should not be included in the per unit TDC thresholds, because as we've seen with Hillside and Hillcrest today, sometimes those acquisition costs will drive up the TDC while not being actual costs to the project or not requiring other resources to address. They argue that they should be treated like capitalized reserves and excluded from the per unit TDC. We do agree that we need a thoughtful way to account for the inclusion of these acquisition costs, which while adding to the TDC calculation, do not represent additional investment on the part of Rhode Island Housing. We're committed to pursuing a conversation about that and looking at different ways that we can make that more clear, both to developers and in the actions that we bring to the board. No change recommended at this time. Comments. Penrose also stated TDC per unit increases post-award, but the developer secures funding from other sources. The developer should not be penalized on future applications. This is something that we certainly have had conversations about, as sometimes, you know, again, using Hillcrest and Hillside as a timely example, except the costs exceed, but they're offset by the federal grant that they received, or if there are costs that arise that as part of the development process that are outside the control, but the developer will secure other funding than Rhode Island Housing funding. We're going to look about how we want to treat that. We're not recommending any change to the QAP at this time, but we want to make sure that we're stewards of Rhode Island Housing resources, mindful if a developer is being proactive in offsetting unanticipated costs, that they're not harmed by that. I'll just quickly run through the changes, which are very minimal and mostly just in terms of clarification. The first is the 10-year placed in service that One Neighborhood Builders recommended. We did include a specific reference to Internal Revenue Code Section 42 for information about the exceptions. Second has to do with affirmative action equal employment opportunity. We've revised the language a bit to acknowledge the possibility of future changes in state law. Next, citing and market consideration, we revised language to clarify Rhode Island Housing's position regarding access to housing on an equal basis without regard to protected characteristics. Just again, a clarification. Limited English proficiency revised to better align with current federal guidance. and the mixed income section revised to correct the typo that I referenced in the comments below. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Dan.
You got it.
Question on this one?
Yep, so move for Rebecca. Second.
Thank you. Second, Deborah. Questions? Just a...
So I just want to sort of pull out something on the comment two on incentivizing mixed income housing.
Mm-hmm.
You say, as such, most of the resources generated by the program serve that purpose. I think we should be more explicit that currently the projects you're seeing, the market rate dump pencil out, and so subsidies, tax credits, pull as much in as you can on those
mm-hmm.
eligible units, but you're spreading it across.
Right.
I think that should be more explicit.
We can certainly...
conversations
that we have had.
Yeah.
We can certainly do that, and it's certainly something we've discussed both in credit and at the board before, so happy to add a little bit stronger language in there that we obviously don't want to use tax credit resources to subsidize market units. So.
As well, on the when you mentioned that you do 10% type A,
mm-hmm.
I think you should take credit and acknowledge that's double the request.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's why we incentivize it. We expect the five, and if somebody goes ahead.
Other people may not know that.
Yep. You got it. Thank you.
Rebecca, yes,
yes
please.
Thank you. Just thematically, I think you've done a great job establishing both the ceiling and some flexibility around the total development cost. It's the environment for any kind of construction project is so wildly unpredictable right now, and even cost estimators are having a very hard time keeping up with projections. So I think having a standard is really important, but recognizing flexibility and thinking back to the conversation about the last two approvals around the long-term savings associated with solar, like that's a creative way to continue to think about the long-term economic viability of the project. So I wondered where it was going to come down with the total development cost estimate, and I think you've done a good job preserving latitude for good projects.
Thank you.
Just to pick up on that, I tend to agree, but I also don't disagree with RIPAC's comments on this, because we don't want to get into the situation where all these extraordinary conditions become mm-hmm. ordinary conditions,
yeah.
mm-hmm. Whereas a developer who's looking at a piece of land that doesn't have soil conditions and right next door one does, and they're like, I don't care.
Right.
Because Rhode Island Housing will just give me a waiver on it anyway. We definitely want to incentivize lower costs, and I think we do that by giving funds in the QAP for lower development costs.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we just should make sure that we still have that incentive in place,
yeah.
I think, along with this flexibility, so we don't get to the point where every 50-70% of the applications
yeah.
coming in are coming in through some kind of exception.
Yeah, and there's a number of ways to look at it. If 40% of the projects have soil conditions, that might also argue that the cap should be higher because that's what the land is. We thought, no, it's better to make the developer prove it and show us the evidence and show us where the cost is coming from, so it's not a free-for-all. I think having those, it's not just I got this, so give me the waiver. It's more, how do you document what the actual cost is? How do you document what the conditions are and what you've done to deal with that? It's not going to be something where it's just, okay, no problem, we'll allow you to spend whatever you want. It's going to be you really have to drill down and get evidence that we can rely on to make sure that it is, in fact, an extraordinary condition and not just, as you say, just like, I'll take whatever property because it's not going to be a big deal.
And I think it's important to acknowledge the constraints that we have in Rhode Island. A lot of the development activity is repurposing old historic buildings
sure.
and factories. And, I probably would be challenged to find piece of property in Providence that wasn't contaminated, right? So, that's kind of what we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
Westerly, where there are DEM concerns. So there are some constraints around the real estate that we
certainly have. And we have other priorities, too. We made certain communities a higher priority than other
mm-hmm.
communities. So if the only land choice is
mm-hmm.
yeah.
needing environmental remediation, it seems appropriate to
yeah.
consider that in light of the other priorities. Comments are for Penrose. Their first comment, I'm scratching my head about this because we just talked about Hillcrest and Hillside that are doing a monster seller note to increase the acquisition basis tremendously. So,
I think the difference, right, is that that's a refinance where they're not it's not a competitive process. For the 9%, where you're held to the TDC, I think that's their concern, is if we have some situation like that, you know, there's not artificial things driving up the TDC that are going to cost them in terms of that application or anything else.
Well, yeah, on the 9% side, I think the limiting factor would be the amount of tax credits that you can get.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going to be, you know, not going to be jacking up the basis. You're probably being already able to produce more basis than you need. And I guess one other comment about the seller note and acquisition basis is I think we need to be careful, right, because the IRS is relying that is true value.
Yeah. No, it has to be supported by an appraisal.
It's only paper in the sense that, I guess, that the related parties doing the transaction, but it theoretically, it should be able to be sold on the open market to a third party at that.
The value has to be supported by an appraisal no matter what. Right. That's what the investor and syndicator requires.
Right. Okay. Great. Well, thank you very much for all the consideration given us, and I think they were very thoughtful comments and thoughtful responses to it all. And
it's a good process.
Yeah, good process.
We'll happily hand over to the department.
You know, the housing department worked closely with us on this.
Great. Okay. Any other comments? Please take a vote on this one.
Yes. All those in favor of recommending approval of the final 2026 qualified allocation plan as presented, please say aye.
Aye.
The opposed say nay. With 3 votes to recommend, the motion is approved. Thank you.
Great. Thanks so much. That concludes our agenda items. We'll just have a pipeline report discussion.
Oh, goodness. Let's see.
I have a particular. I was just
walking. You got a question?
While he's looking that up, I don't know if you all know, we have High Real Estate who will be joining us in on August 25th. Yeah, so we're happy about that. James is very happy about that.
Yes, somebody I think we'll be very pleased with.
Good. I was walking down Westminster Street, and I was just curious when the old Providence Journal and Kresge. And we're going to get underway, if you have any idea.
As of now, progress has been very slow. They still haven't chosen their lender yet, so that has been the hold-up in terms of documents or anything provided to us to review. It's been very minimal. Once they make that lender decision, we should be able to, you know, put the pedal down and get to closing. We'll get to firm and then get to closing.
Okay.
As of now, very little has been done.
Okay. All right.
Difficult property.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that open space.
Okay. Any other developments of note or anything?
No, I'm very happy. We just recently did a little assessment of, are things significantly delayed? Are things delayed with spending some of the SFRF dollars? And really, a couple of things had been delayed that were just closed in the past month. We're on track to spend the SFRF dollars in time.
This month or this month?
The ERA 2 is by September 30th of this year.
Okay.
SFRF is December of next year. But several of them, as Rebecca can attest, were reclassified into what's called revenue replacement, so that softens a bit. But we anticipate spending everything by the end of next year, the way things are currently trending. I don't want to say too much, but we're moving along at a pretty good clip. There are a couple that got stuck there for a little bit in the closing process, not due to issues with us necessarily, but worked through them and got them done. But the development team has been doing a great job. They've been working straight out for years now to get all these projects done, and we're in a pretty good place right now with, again, a pipeline of deals that we've given acquisition money and pre-development money following behind, and, you know, that are a bit earlier in the process that you'll be seeing over the next months and years.
Questions?
No.
wraps up things. Okay. Anything else to chat about? Okay. Motion to adjourn.
Motion.
Seconded. Great. And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.